Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Support for this podcast is provided by Subchuck Law. Revolution Recap thanks Subchuck Law for their support of our show, local independent media, and their mission of bringing unbiased truth. Revolution Recap would also like to thank Six Point Builders for their support. Six Point Builders are builders of fine custom homes in the Boston metropolitan area. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Revolution Recap. The most magical day of the year, Super Draft Day, has come and gone. Another one in the books, and this year is arguably the most uneventful for the New England Revolution as they traded away their two remaining draft picks to Minnesota United. So they come away with no players out of the Super Draft, but they do end the day with a new head coach as they named Caleb Porter their ninth head coach in franchise history. I'm Greg Johnstone. Joining me today, Sean Donahue. Sean, how's it going today?
Good, doing very well. I was excited to watch the Super Draft today, and then I got the notice that they had traded away their picks, so I skipped it.
Yeah, it's, you know, there's a bit of relief too. We didn't have to spend the afternoon browsing college players' statistics, trying to figure out when someone was on the second team in their conference and when they were on the all freshman team, and try to learn as much as we can about these college players. We just skipped it altogether. Just closed out, went back to work, and here we are. With a lot less research. Sean, real fast though, we haven't done a Tottenham 20 in a while. How is Tottenham doing these days?
You know, it had a little bit of a rough stretch with a lot of injuries and a lot of losses, but they seem to have kind of turned the corner. Hopeful for another win this weekend and maybe get back into the top four.
Yes, and I just want the listeners to know that a certain someone convinced me to bet on Tottenham to finish in the top four of the and that hasn't really looked great to this point. So just wanted to give a shout out to Sean for that great gambling advice.
They were in first place when that happened, and they did not do very well since then.
And look at where they are now. But also joining us today, someone who hasn't given me bad gambling advice, it's Tom Pinzoni. Tom, how are you doing?
Good. Never bet on Tottenham.
You know, it's a lesson I knew, but I still fell for it anyway, just because that's the level of faith I have in Sean. And, you know, I got fooled. I feel like he's convinced me to bet on Tottenham before, too. You know, tricked me into betting on Tottenham once. Shame on you. Tricked me into betting on Tottenham twice. Shame on me.
Yeah. I think the minimum bet you can make is like 10 cents. So I just keep it to 10 cents with Tottenham and you'll be all right.
That's sound
good,
advice.
Good advice for the future. Well, and by the way, if you are going to lose all of your money betting on Tottenham, I recommend you do it at Bet Online. All the major sports are in action this week with the college football playoffs ready to kick off. Bet Online is your number one destination for all of your sports wagering info, including news for pro football, the NBA, upcoming fights, and NHL games this season, and of course, English Premier League, where Tottenham can let you down. So head to the website today and get in on the action to see all of the updated odds for the week. Remember to use our promo code BLEAVE. BLEAV to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. That is promo code BLEAV, BLEAV to receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet Online, where the game starts. All right. Let's get into another wonderful Super Draft Day. And it really starts out in a kind of different area with Caleb Porter being named as head coach of the New England Revolution. Tom, I will give you the first honors on getting a Caleb Porter take out there. Some interesting names involved. We've talked about it before. Bob Bradley, Gio Savarese, Dominic Kinnear, and Robin Fraser were the other four kind of noted and tied with the Revolution job. But it's Caleb Porter who comes away as the next head coach of the New England Revolution. Tom, what's your thoughts on this hire?
I mean, once that list came out, it wasn't really anybody on the list that jumped out as someone that I really hoped that they would go and get. You know, the one person on the list that I hoped that they would avoid was Bob Bradley. So they at least did that. I thought he really, really struggled in Toronto with, you know, I mean, they had the biggest payroll in the league and they came in last place. So I'm glad that they at least didn't go down that road. And, you know, Porter makes a lot of sense initially. You know, he's been at two MLS clubs previously. He's won an MLS Cup with both of them. You know, so just a kind of a quick glance at what he's done, it seems like a good appointment. But if you look a little deeper at what he did with, you know, Columbus Crew, he missed the playoffs in 3 years out of four. The season that he did win the MLS Cup was in 2020. It was a shortened season due to COVID. They only played 23 games. You know, so, you know, and the team that he took over actually had made the playoffs in 2018. They'd come fifth with 51 points, and in his first season, they dropped down to 10th and only had 38 points. So I had heard someone mention that they felt like he was a guy that could, you know, step right in and win right away, and, you know, maybe that'll be the case, but maybe not. I think he really struggled for most of his time in Columbus. But, you know, it's kind of what I expected the Revs to do. You know, he was available. He has MLS experience. He's got a couple of MLS Cup trophies, and, you know, the Revs don't have any of those. So it seems like a pretty safe move, and those are the types of moves that the Revs tend to make.
Sean, yeah. What's your take here, Sean?
Yeah, I generally agree with Tom there. I think there, you know, it's not a move that gets you super excited, right? I think there was maybe some unrealistic expectations from some fans with some of the names that were being thrown out there. Not the names that were being thrown out there tied to the Revs. The names that were being thrown out there tied to the Revs were, you know, MLS veteran coaches that, you know, had a lot of experience. But I think there were some people trying to bring in big European names, which I don't think was ever really going to happen. So of the names that were actually mentioned tied to the Revs, I think the Revs could have done a lot worse than Caleb Porter. They did get a coach that has two MLS Cups. It's one MLS Cups, which, with, you know, he's coached two MLS teams. He's won MLS Cups with both of them, and did so within the first few years of both of his tenures there. You know, the knock on him, something like Tom said, is that, you know, he's won these MLS Cups, and then afterwards the team has not been able to continue to maintain that level of success, both with Portland and Columbus. I think with Portland he had, you know, three good years, won an MLS Cup, and then the team went downhill. With Columbus, he had a bad year, then won MLS Cup, and then the team was bad the next 2 years. But I do think you look at his record of success in winning MLS Cup. You look at where the Revs roster is right now. I think the Revs have a roster, at least if you're basing your roster on Carles Hill, an MLS MVP. He's 31 years old. I think he probably only has, you know, two or three good years left, or at least years at the level that he's been playing at left. So if Porter can continue his trend of winning an MLS Cup within the first two or three years, this will work out well for the Revs, and the Revs can move on and maybe go out and make a more exciting signing or a more risky signing as their next head coach. But this is kind of a safe choice of a guy that knows MLS. He's won an MLS Cup before, two MLS Cups before. So I think it's just kind of a safe choice for the Revs to make, and one that, you know, could work out and could end up leading to them winning an MLS Cup. And then I think the Revs need to know that there's a sell-by date on Porter, and it's usually after two to three seasons. So it's important that, you know, if they do have success, that they're willing to cut bait quickly when things turn south, because it seems like in all of his tenures, they do turn south.
Mm-hmm. And I think safe choice is kind of a good phrasing, I think, from both of you here. And Sean, you kind of said something like it could have been a lot worse. I think that's a really good way to put it. Caleb Porter, it could be worse. We could go out and get someone inexperienced. We could go get someone with bigger red flags than Caleb Porter. Porter certainly has the resume, and just going down here, he has nine MLS seasons. He's won two MLS Cups, both with different teams, one with the Timbers, one with the Crew. He's one of six coaches to win two MLS Cups. He's one of three to win it with multiple franchises. He has a 534 win percentage, which is 10th best in Major League Soccer. He won the 2010 NCAA Championship with the Akron Zips. Shout out Scott Caldwell. And of course, he has a 2013 Coach of the Year. So he has a Coach of the Year award as well. So that's a pretty decent resume. That's a pretty solid resume. I think you're both of you have kind of touched it, where of the names that were tied to this job, it's MLS guys, and they all have some sort of flaw. And with Caleb Porter, the good times are good, the bad times are bad. Normally, a coach that won MLS Cup within the last 5 years is beloved by their fan base. If you look at Columbus Crew fans talking about Caleb Porter being hired by the Revs, we're getting a lot of good luck. Have fun with that. When things go south, they go south. I believe three of his four seasons in Columbus, they missed the playoffs. And those were pretty solid Columbus teams as well. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens with Caleb Porter here. It seems, I don't want to say high risk, high reward, because I think it's a solid hire. I don't think it elevates the team beyond what Bruce Arena built it to, but I don't think that they have lowered their status at all. I think if you go to someone like Dominic Kinnear, who hasn't had a head coaching job in half a decade plus, and won MLS Cups, you know, 10 years ago, I think people are kind of wondering what's the deal with that. You mentioned Bob Bradley, Tom. You know, you look at his past couple of jobs, he was a flop in Toronto, and when they left LAFC, they immediately won MLS Cup with a guy they plucked from USL. So he's had some big teams, and he hasn't brought them the biggest level of success. So, you know, that's a big question mark. Robin Fraser, he's done a good job with two teams that were kind of on the lower end of the talent pool in MLS, but he's never had a team that wants to win right now. Caleb Porter, this is a good win now move. I think of the names that were out there, it's the win now move to do, and it's either going to work out great or it's really not. It's going to be interesting to see where this one lands, but I think for right now, if you were to give me what's the best win now coach, it's probably Caleb Porter, but it doesn't elevate you to, you know, there is no real home run hire here. And so I think this is really the best they could do, because there wasn't going to be a Jesse Marsh or Jim Curtin or an Oscar Pareja available. This is it. So I do have to ask, though, if let's say the Revs have a season like 2022 where they fall out of the Champions Cup relatively in poor fashion or in the first one or two rounds and then miss the playoffs this season, do we think Caleb Porter is already on the hot seat? Because I look at this as the championship window is 1 or 2 years, and then you're going to need to, you know, some players are leaving. Sean, I mean, do you think that we might be talking at the end of the year, if this team finishes in 10th, 11th place, if this might be a one and done for Porter if he fails and doesn't bring success right away?
Yeah, I think they absolutely should be if that's the case. I don't know if that will be how it works out, but he's taking over a roster that's very good. There are certainly some flaws in it, but I think they've shown they have the talent to compete in MLS, and if they don't make the playoffs next year, that would certainly be a huge negative for him. And I think it is a situation where you look at it and think of it, you know, as a one and done situation. You know, you can go back to Columbus and say he didn't have the great first season, then won a second season. But I think if he doesn't get it done in year one, at least as far as making the playoffs and being kind of competitive in the playoffs, you do look at moving on. But that'd be me. I don't know if the Revs actually see it that way.
Well, Tom, that's Sean. Tom, what do you think?
You know, the complicated thing is that, you know, for an awful to turn around and fire a guy that he just hired after one season, you know, that kind of makes it look like he made a bad decision. You know, if you give him 1 year and fire him, then people turn around and say, well, you know, how much thought did you really put into this? If you know, you gave this guy a season, it didn't go so well, and you're going to turn around and fire him. You know, if you're a GM who starts firing coaches, if you go through two or three coaches in short order and none of them were working out, well, then the next logical question is, well, maybe it's the GM. You know, and he's not protected by being both like Bruce was. So I think he would probably give him two seasons. I don't see how the Revs could miss the playoffs with the roster that they have. So maybe, you know, maybe if they do have some sort of a horrible season where they finish outside of the play, and, you know, it's also really hard to miss the playoffs in MLS at this point. 2/3 of the league gets in every year. So I'd be surprised if they miss the playoffs. And I don't think Anolfo is going to turn around and fire the first guy that he hired after one season, because I think that just puts the hot seat. That's just going to turn around and put a lot of pressure on him pretty early in his tenure as well. You know, he's only been the GM for 2 weeks now, 2.5 weeks.
Technically, officially, yes.
sorry. Yeah. Without the interim tag. Right. But it's tough. I mean, you know, the Revs missed the playoffs in 2022, and they turned back around, and, you know, they were on course to be one of the top teams in the Eastern Conference. They obviously had a record-setting season in 2021. So MLS, I think, is a league where, you know, a couple things don't go your way, it can unravel pretty quickly, and you can miss the playoffs, and, you know, and then kind of bounce back shortly thereafter.
Mm-hmm. Good point.
The problem is Carly Aciel's contract is up after the season, right? So if they have a poor season, you might have trouble bringing him back, and then it's almost a rebuild at that point, right?
Well, I imagine the contract thing will be settled soon. I mean, I get what you're saying, Sean, but I would imagine if he's going to stay, they're going to figure out something soon. I get what you're saying, but I think it's kind of a side quest type of thing.
Well, they let Bo's contract run down as well. You know, I mean, I think once you get the other side of 30, you can only pay three guys the amount of money that they're paying them. So I think they probably have to be a little careful, with jumping ahead and maybe signing him to, maybe he asks for a 2 or 3 year extension and they're not prepared to do that given his age. It's very tricky to figure out, what they're going to do with Carlos after this year. But I don't think they're going to rush and give him an extension because they didn't do that with Bo. Once you lock somebody into a long-term contract on big money, it can be kind of tough to get out of it.
Mm-hmm. Very good points. Either way, it's either going to be a big hit or a big miss, but it's going to be great for content. So we're really excited for the 2024 season on Revolution Recap. Let's get to the Super Draft. Bit of a boring day for the Revolution. They traded their first and third round picks for $100,000 in general allocation money to Minnesota United. They had previously traded their second round pick during the season for the rights to In Herx to DC United. It is worth noting that last year, the 20th pick overall in the draft went for $50,000 in general allocation money, and typically third round picks are more or less useless. So $100,000 is a pretty good haul for value if you're a value type of person. It is worth noting, I believe they've changed the rules of the super drafts where it's not just seniors that can be eligible. They're explaining it on Extra Time, but basically teams can now draft players and they can stay in college. So essentially you can draft some higher potential guys. So maybe that increased the value of these picks. I don't know. But overall, $100,000 in GAM for the first and third picks. First and third round picks for the New England Revolution. They end up with no picks today. Kurt Adolfo says, as we evaluated our supplemental roster and the strength of our academy and pro pathway ahead of Tuesday's MLS Super Draft and weighed that against our late round position in the draft order, we decided that the best way to strengthen our club this week would be to leverage our draft capital into valuable allocation money that will help allow us greater flexibility to enhance our team through the senior roster. It's also worth noting that the supplemental roster on the Revolutions that the Revolution have right now is full. So if they were to select someone with the 20th pick, that is person is probably either getting a Revs 2 contract or they're going to have to loan someone out or move someone off of the current supplemental roster. So with all of that being said, also they traded Jordan Adebayo-Smith, Revs 2 striker. He scored 12 goals for Revs 2 this year. They traded him also to Minnesota in a separate deal for $125,000 in general allocation money. That move has not been made official yet, but that is per Andy Greeter of the St. Paul Pioneer Press. I assume that is true. So two separate trades for $225,000 in GAM. With all that being said, Sean, what do you think of these moves? Do you like the moves the Revs made today?
Yeah, so I got to go back to the last episode, which I wasn't on, and get back to the roster moves for a second. And because of all the contract options they exercised, as you pointed out, they had no room on the supplemental roster, right? So there wasn't much room really to sign any of these guys if they had drafted someone in the super draft. So in that sense, it makes sense. 20th pick is not that. Not that valuable, as you pointed out, went for $50,000 last year, $100,000 this year. The super draft just becoming less and less important as academies become bigger and more successful and as you bring up players that way. So, with all that said, it makes sense. But I will go back and just quickly say I was a little bit surprised that they picked up all the contract options that they picked up when they announced that and put themselves in this position. Two that stick out to me are Damian Rivera, who has been here for a long time now and I don't think has necessarily shown enough, even though he's still pretty young. But more so Ryan Spalding, who is now 25 and who the Rev picked up his contract option. I know we talked about this before offline, but my thoughts on that move is that it showed last year that they really don't have a lot of faith in Ryan Spalding because they did everything possible to keep him off the field, including playing Matt Polster at fullback, Ben Sweat, really everything they could do to keep him off the field. So I was surprised that they picked up Ryan Spalding at 25 years old contract and took that supplemental roster spot, because that's a position where maybe you're better off now that you have Nick Lima on the roster, more veteran depth piece, to going out there and drafting a guy that could play left back with that 20th pick and giving him a shot, because it doesn't seem like you have much faith in Ryan Spalding, and Ryan Spalding is now 25. So that's my one little bit of a side rant on that, but given that they did exercise his contract option, this move makes sense to me. Jordan Adebayo-Smith was very good for Revs 2. I got to be honest, I didn't see a lot of Revs 2 this year. I don't know exactly what type of striker he is or how he fits into the Revs system, but if they didn't see a pathway to have him join the first team this year, again, with the supplemental roster spots and everything that was going to be difficult, then it makes sense to move on from him. And I think getting $125,000 for a Revs 2 player is probably a pretty decent haul.
Tom, anything to add on top of Sean's thoughts on trading the Super Draft picks and JAS?
Yeah, I mean, I think moving the picks on makes sense, right? If there isn't somebody that you think is going to be available at the pick that you have that is going to bring immediate value to the team, and, we've seen plenty of players come through from the academy and have success. And, I think MLS themselves had an article this week almost trying to justify why the MLS draft still exists. So I don't really see the point of it now where every club has, a second team, they have an academy, they know who these guys are, they all play in summer league teams as well. So I don't really see why the mechanism still needs to be in place. So if somebody wants to take those picks and give the Revs some GAM or TAM or MLS crypto, whatever it is, it seems like a good move to make. And then Adebayo Smith, I understand there's a bit of a roster squeeze situation that maybe they don't have room for him. But I thought he would have been somebody to keep around as a third choice striker. Bobby Wood was able to stay relatively healthy last year, which he's not always able to do. His play was inconsistent. Verone, some people think that he's going to come through. Some people maybe not so much. And I thought he'd done quite well with Revs too. I saw him play two or three times. He had a good ability to get him behind. He could hold the ball up. He had 12 goals, 6 assists. So I thought maybe that was someone that they might try and find a way to hang on to, at least later on into the offseason, see if a roster spot opens up. But, all in all, I don't think any of these moves are really going to have a big impact on the success that they, do or don't have in 2024.
I just want to say that we've never made this joke before, but it seems so obvious now. But calling GAM MLS crypto, I think, has to be a recurring bit on this show just because it's absolutely perfect.
It's catchier. So.
Much catchier than general allocation money, for sure. I personally love these moves. I talked about the value earlier. Pick 20, I believe it was Jacob Jackson who was pick 20 a few years ago. If they needed a third string keeper or a player that's in development, they could go get it. But you're right, Sean. Maybe if there was a left back, they could look for. But, we could maybe pick it, but there's probably just no one they have in mind that they wanted to pick. There's not a lot of holes in terms of the supplemental roster that you can have someone fill in. So I'm not totally shocked that they moved on and just kind of sold off for what they could get, and they got a pretty decent haul. Same thing with Adebayo Smith. I think he had a phenomenal season with Revs too. I think he had a good season. He showed a lot of promise. I know that Josh and I at the Blazing Musket was outraged that he was traded, but the team promoted Malcolm Fry and not him. We talked about that a little bit, and we know Malcolm Fry is a bit of a different player. He's kind of more of a winger, kind of in a Justin Rennick's mold. But Adebayo Smith, I believe, is more of kind of like a nine player. So maybe if you were trading Bobby Wood, you could move him up to the roster, but he's pretty much blocked. So I don't know his contract situation, but if you're at Revs 2 for more than 2 years and you're in your early to mid 20s, you probably need to move on with your career. We looked at Pierre Caillette. I know there is an article on the Blazing Musket. They talked to Pierre, and he said, I feel like I belong in Major League Soccer. I'm not going to get the opportunity here. So when his contract ended, he moved on. It's better to trade him to Minnesota and see if he does well in his opportunities elsewhere than to just keep him at Revs to block him from ever making an impact with the first team and losing him on a free contract. And the fact that they got $125,000 too for Revs 2, I think is phenomenal. And I think you have to give a tip of the cap to the scouting department. That's the value. I believe the 11th pick today was traded for $125,000 in GAM. So basically the Revs created first round pick value from a Revs 2 signing. There's a lot of credit that goes to the international scouting staff that even though he never played a game for the Revs, they were able to get some MLS crypto and help increase the pockets of the senior team out of that. One more note, though, before we move on from the Super Draft, just because they did trade the third round pick, too. And you might think, why trade the third round pick? I've noticed in years past, teams, especially the Revs, will draft players from their academy or take flyers on certain players. I forget the name of the center back from Virginia last year that didn't end up signing, but they take flyers and sometimes they take people that were in their academy just so they can hold their rights. There were a few interesting names this year that I thought maybe would be a fit for that third round pick if no one took them. But Trevor Burns, who went to Georgetown, he was highly touted coming out of the academy. I believe he was the academy player of the year 1 year. He did not get selected. I believe he wasn't selected. And then also Elliot Jones, who at one point was supposed to be a big goalkeeping prospect. He went to Stanford. He's graduated. I don't think either one was selected today, but I thought that might be a homegrown connection that maybe the Revs select them, send them down to Revs 2 for a couple of years, hold their MLS rights, and if they are able to make the next step, maybe that those are some players that at one point were high potential kids that, you know, maybe if you bring them back home and put them in Revs 2, maybe they make that next step. But it seems like they weren't interested in that at all, and they took the crypto and ran. Just like SBF, am I right? All right, I'm going to move on from that one. Nothing to add on Trevor Burns. Got it. Next topic. The world was outraged this week when Don Garber announced that Major League Soccer will no longer be sending their senior teams to the U.S. Open Cup competition. They will instead send their reserve teams, their number two MLS Next Pro teams. Sean, what is your take? Are you outraged just like every other soccer fan on the internet?
I'm outraged, but not surprised. I think it was a long time coming. The league hasn't, you know, invested much into the tournament, or a lot of teams don't take it seriously, including the Revs haven't taken it seriously at times. With all that said, I'm very disappointed that the league is no longer taking part of it. I think it's a very worthy competition. It's an opportunity for, you know, the little guy to play the Revolution or to play other MLS teams. And I always enjoyed going out to Revs games, whether they're at Gillette or whether they're in New Britain or Ludlow or at Harvard or wherever they were holding them. I always enjoyed those games and kind of seeing an opportunity to see a lower division team that, you know, you might not otherwise watch. And have them have an opportunity to take on the Revs. And, you know, the Revs then had the opportunity to play which first team, you know, players weren't getting a lot of minutes if that's how they wanted to take it. You know, call up Revs 2 players to play. They could choose to do it however they wanted. And if they wanted to play an entire Revs 2 team of call-ups, they could do that. And now that opportunity has been taken away because the league has, you know, just deemed that Revs 2 teams and everyone's, you know, MLS Next Pro team is going to be competing, and the teams don't have the option of having their first team in it anymore. So yeah, I'm disappointed. It's not something that, you know, drew a lot of money to the league. Obviously, it wasn't a big revenue generator for the league. It was a big revenue generator for the lower division teams. And it was kind of a nice, you know, kind of a way of, in some ways, of MLS teams helping out the lower divisions and bringing them attention and bringing them money. But it wasn't a big money maker for MLS. So because of that, I'm not surprised that they're dropping out, but I am disappointed because I've always enjoyed it. It was nice to have, you know, the oldest cup competition in the U.S. be a soccer tournament and keep that tradition alive. And you know, there's a strong history of that in New England with the Fall River Marksmen and several other teams here that have won it back historically. I always enjoyed seeing those exhibits when the, you know, the Soccer Hall of Fame was in Oneonta, New York. I traveled out there a few times. So to me, it had a lot of meaning. I went to a lot of games, traveled to a lot of games, both coverage and in the stands. So I'm very disappointed that the league is no longer taking part in it, and I hope that they reconsider the decision. But at the same time, very unsurprised.
Tom, what's your thoughts here?
Yeah, I agree with Sean. You know, it kind of created – MLS kind of created this you know, fixture schedule congestion problem, you know, with the League's Cup and the expanded CONCACAF Cup, which, you know, I don't think anyone's really super excited about the CONCACAF Cup being expanded, and it's, you know, it's a fun competition. You know, I went to both the Cup games last year, and it, you know, there was, you know, a small crowd, you get to sit nice and close, and it's you know, it's a lot of fun to, you know, watch these USL championship teams, you know, try and knock off a couple MLS teams. You know, that's kind of the appeal of cup matches all across the world. You know, it's you know, the FA Cup is, you know, it's the same thing. You know, they rotate their squads in the third round if they're playing a lower opponent. You know, the second choice goalkeeper gets a run. But once you get to the quarterfinal, semifinal stage, you know, there's still some really good games that come out of those competitions. And, you know, it's just really, I don't know, it, you know, the NBA even this year, the NBA started doing an in-season tournament, and that seemed to go over really, really well. So you see, you know, the NBA trying to be more like European soccer and bring this tournament in, and then U.S. soccer, you know, or MLS turns around and drops their in-season tournament. So, yeah, they also kind of play like, well, you know, it's not even on TV on a regular basis, you know, there's not a lot of exposure. It's like, but, you know, MLS could have done something about that, right? They could have worked with Apple and tried to get more of those games on TV. You know, so I think they could have actually tried to really do something to turn this into a bigger tournament, but instead they've just turned around and just said, ah, you know, we can't be bothered. And the fact that they're now going to put their MLS Next teams in instead, like Sean said, if a MLS team couldn't be bothered and they wanted to just put out a whole team of, you know, reserves and second team players, they had that option. So there was really nothing stopping them from doing that anyway for the first couple of rounds. So, you know, it's a little disappointing. You know, the tournaments are – all types of tournaments are, you know, can be a lot of fun and really enjoyable, and they've just kind of just decided that they can't be bothered with it.
Yeah, and I think one of the comments too was that, you know, this opens up three or four or five extra Wednesdays we can play games on, which is nobody wants Wednesday games anyway. So like if they're using this as an opportunity to play more Wednesday league games, I think that's not great either. With this, the one other point I wanted to make from a New England perspective is, you know, this was the first tournament the Revs made the final of in 2001. This was the first major trophy the Revs won in 2007. So it's, you know, it's disappointing from a Revs perspective too, that, you know, one of the few pieces of silverware they have and one of the things that they've had some history in is now kind of being made more, you know, less worthy.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional grade supplies backed by product experts, so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
No, I agree with all of these points, and part of me too wonders if Don Garber is looking at this and he's saying there's no way that, you know, Leo Messi is ever playing at a USL stadium or against a USL team. We're not wasting a game of Messi against a USL side. But even Messi aside, MLS clearly hates this competition. I always thought that the US Open Cup really, you know, favored MLS sides anyway, where the lower division teams had to go to their stadiums and cater around these MLS teams already. I always thought that they should have done more of a, you know, draw where, you know, if you get drawn against a League One team, fine, the Revs are going to Omaha. And there's nothing stopping you from playing a reserve side. And I wonder how a team that's at the bottom of the standings, like Colorado or Chicago, or, you know, whoever, San Jose, if you're one of these coaches, you know, the U.S. Open Cup could have been another competition for you to get another plus on your resume. And now that is suddenly gone. So, I mean, I remember the 2016 season with the Revs. That was not a great season for the Revs. And that was kind of near the end of Jay Heaps' tenure. But Jay Heaps probably gave himself a little bit of time by making the final against FC Dallas that year. So I think that this is going to have some ramifications for kind of the bottom of the barrel teams that, you know, probably would like to have a shot at US Open Cup and maybe get the CONCACAF Champions Cup berth, which I'm sure will be taken away soon. I'm sure there's no way they're going to let a USL team get into that competition. I'm sure MLS is already lobbying for that. So I think that this is pretty crappy all the way around. You know, MLS could have just recommended teams send their reserve sides from now on, but I don't know. It is what it is. It certainly was trending that way. And it's kind of like how the Super Draft, I think, Tom, you made a comment that the Super Draft is maybe kind of going towards being less impactful. I think maybe both you and Sean said that. It seems like US Open Cup in the past 10 years has really lost a lot of its stature, and it just seems like more of a chore for these MLS sides. So disappointing. And I will miss, too, kind of the charm of the U.S. Open Cup, watching on YouTube with bad commentators, turning it on. I remember that 2016 final. I had to wait until minute 20 for it to come on to ESPN2 because the WNBA game that was on before it went into overtime. A lot of little things. And of course, it was on like Wednesday at like 10:30. A lot of little things that are extremely inconvenient in minor league about it. But at the same time, very, very charmful. So I will miss the U.S. Open Cup. I mean, I guess it's not going anywhere. I guess just Revs 2. But either way, really disappointing all the way around from Major League Soccer. Anything else on this before we move on?
No, it's just, you know, like I said, a long time coming, but it is very disappointing that it's finally happened, that the league has pulled out of it. And, you know, you mentioned, as you know, as an example, bad teams like the 2001 Revs made it all the way to the final when they, you know, were not a good team, couldn't make the playoffs. And then I'm sure that contributed a lot to their success the next year, or at least contributed to, you know, some of the experience these guys had in the playoffs next year when they made it to MLS Cup just a year later. Obviously, a lot of other things contributed, coaching change and players changing and everything. But it's just another example of a team that, you know, like you point out, was really bad and had an opportunity to do well in the Open Cup, and then kind of bled into a good MLS season the next year and having that experience for the playoffs. And that's going to be gone now.
Mm-hmm. I also miss the neutral site games, but the games at Brown, the games at Harvard. I think there was something about the smaller venue games, which they've seemed to have gotten away from. At least the Revs have gotten away from in recent year.
Which was Bruce Arena's decision, so you don't know if they would have gone back to that in the future if they had kept staying in the Open Cup.
That's true. Maybe Caleb Porter is very pro games at Ivy League schools. We will never know. We will never, never know. One thing I do want to disagree with Tom, though, is he said that he doesn't like the expanded CONCACAF Champions Cup. As a podcast that watches every game from the team that made literally the last birth to that that cup, I will disagree, at least for this year. But we should talk about the draw of the CONCACAF Champions Cup. First round is against Independiente. I'm going to butcher both of these names, but Independiente out of Panama. They qualified as the Central American Cup semifinalists. They won both of their domestic leagues in 2023. They play one in the spring and one in the fall. So a very solid Central American team. This is their second appearance in the CONCACAF Champions League Cup, Champions League, whatever you want to call it right now, CONCACAF. It's their second appearance. They made the quarterfinals in 2019 when they beat Toronto FC 5-1 over two legs and then lost to Sporting Kansas City 4-2 over two legs. Sean, what is your thoughts on the draw for the Revs? Do you think they got away with one here?
Yeah, on paper, it's a very favorable draw for the Revs. I mean, I'd be lying if I said I watched the Panama League, but certainly this is a team the Revolution should beat. You know, the difficulty being that they are not going to be in regular season form. It'll be their first competitive game, so that will be tough, but... and that we certainly seen the Revs choke in CONCACAF competition in the past, all throughout the years. But I think it was a very favorable draw. They get Independiente, a team from Panama, in the first round. And if they advance past that, they still avoid a team from Mexico or MLS. They place Alajuelense, who I should note they has knocked the Revolution out of the CONCACAF Champions League twice before. But that was a long time ago. And so, you know, getting them and avoiding a Mexican team is a very solid draw for the Revolution. They wouldn't face a Mexican team until the quarterfinals, in which case I think it's quite likely they would face a Mexican team. But being able to avoid a Mexican team for the first two rounds, I think, is a very favorable draw for the Revolution. And getting a team from Panama in the first round means the Revolution should advance out of the first round. But we've watched the Revolution long enough to know that nothing should be taken for granted, and they can lose to any team.
Tom, any thoughts?
Yeah, you know, does it get any better than Foxborough in February? You know, that I'm sure that... You want to talk about, you know, we get rid of the Open Cup to open up more of these midweek games that, you know, like Sean said, that, you know, I've never heard Revolution supporters asking for more midweek games to go to. Certainly not in February. it'd be interesting to see, you know, what their fitness level is at, you know, that early in the season. You know, how strong of a team Porter decides to put out, if he really wants to, you know, go for it, or if he's going to use it as maybe kind of like an extension of preseason just to get a longer look at some of the guys that maybe, you know, that he's not too familiar with or might not have a big role to play once the season gets going. But yeah, I mean, you just kind of hope that they are able to manage the first leg, and, you know, come home and take care of business in advance and go from there. You know, it's one of those competitions where, okay, it's expanded, you know, a third of MLS is qualified for this tournament. So I don't think it quite has the prestige that it might have had before, where a smaller number of teams qualified. You know, when your team qualifies for a competition 4 weeks after their season ends because some other team did something in MLS Cup final, it's, you know, it's kind of convoluted, but you know, if they only have this and the MLS regular season, then, you know, hopefully they can make a good run and get off to a good start.
Tom, I need you to stop downplaying the major accomplishment the New England Revolution had by qualifying.
Do you even know how they got in?
They got in, yeah, because the right team won MLS Cup. But you are downplaying. No. The Revs earned it from accumulating points over the season, and we have to give credit to the masterful job of Clint PA for getting us just barely enough points to get in for that last slot. Because obviously, we all knew Columbus was going to win MLS Cup in the end. So we knew we masterfully planned to get just enough points to finish in fifth place or whatever it was in the East, which gets us a berth by default. Because apparently, no one was racking up points in the West this entire season. I don't know how that happened. I don't know how we finished above second place in the West. I don't know what's going on out there. But either way, masterful job by Clint P.A. Cardinalfo. Good job, guys. Mwah!
I gotta give the league some credit because I thought they were going to try to find a way to get LAFC in the CONCACAF Champions Cup instead of the Revs because LAFC were finalists in the CONCACAF Champions Cup last year, MLS Cup finalists this year, and on merit probably deserved it more than the Revs. But I'm glad they kept the original rules and the Revs got to compete in CONCACAF Champions Cup because I was really up until the last moment expecting them to find some sort of loophole or switch the rules and get LAFC in there instead of the Revs.
Don Garber's going to announce tomorrow. Don Garber with CONCACAF, they're going to announce that like one of these berths automatically goes to a New York or LA team. The New York or LA team with the most points gets into the CONCACAF Cup. Which, truth be told, MLS gets so many of these berths. US Open Cup plus four just general standings from Major League Soccer, and then you have Leagues Cup. You have Major League Soccer CS. That's 1-2, and then there's also runners up in Leagues Cup. So 3-4-9 berths. So I think you're right. It actually is literally 1/3 of Major League Soccer. I didn't realize it was literally 1/3. Great accomplishment, though. Great accomplishment. I got to say, though, too, the Revs get, I don't want to say lucky, but the fact that they are avoiding a Liga MX and MLS team through the first two rounds of this competition, I think that that's goes pretty well for them. I don't mean to look past this team from Panama who, this is the longest trip in this competition for them. They're going to be flying up to Foxborough in February. I'm sure they're in for a treat. Was Panama the team that the U.S. played in Minnesota when Matt Turner got frostbite, but he didn't get frostbite, and they, like, froze their players to death? Do you remember that? Was that Panama that the USA did that to?
I'm embarrassed to say I can't remember who it was.
Good times, but maybe we're getting. I wonder how many players are going to leave. Panamanian players are going to leave with frostbite in late February. But either way, the Costa Rican team here that won the Central American Cup, they were the champions in 2004 too. So I'm sure they're going to give a very, very strong battle as well. But overall, I think if you're the Revs, the way this draw worked out was pretty good. I was disappointed in a few things. I really wanted the Revs to draw Cavalry FC in the first round because, as Tom, Sean, as you know, 2 years ago, I spent a lot of time watching Cavalry FC games because I thought I was watching Cavalli. And that was a major error on my part. The other team that I was, that's also not to be confused with Cavalier, which is a Jamaican team. But the other thing too, that I was really, really hopeful for was I was hoping the Revs would end up in the bracket and potentially have a second round matchup with Robin Hood, which is a real team. There's a team called Robin Hood. And I just wanted to say that on the podcast because I thought that was really funny. So moving on, any thoughts? Anything? Good? We good?
There's no, I mean, Robin Hood's a good name. Joe Public was a good name, but not a good name for Revs fans.
Mm-hmm. Boy, we are really into the kind of making a lot of finance references today between SBF and Robin Hood today. But let's move on to someone who doesn't know anything about crypto or Robin Hood or anything like that, Bruce Arena. Bruce Arena reinstated by Major League Soccer, a bit interesting because he's been suspended or whatever you want to call it from the league for like 90 days. It seems like his investigation went on longer than his, timeout slap on the wrist period. We still don't know what happened with Bruce Arena. We're still in the dark on a lot of things. And it seemed like Major League Soccer was really punishing him at the time by making him petition. And it seemed to tip that he did something in the wrong. And that was a big, big no-no. And now they've reinstated him. So it seems like maybe it's not a big no-no or they're looking past the big no-no. We don't know. Sean, what's your thoughts on this Bruce Arena situation as it continues to unfold with everyone clueless and in the dark?
Yeah, it seems nuts to me, right? Like, what did he do that required him to have to file a petition to be reinstated? And what has he done since that has made it be justifiable for him to be reinstated? And I don't think the league has officially announced he's been reinstated. He clearly has been because Doug McIntyre from Fox Soccer reported it from multiple sources, and I certainly trust that. But I don't think the league's officially announced it. But if the league does, go out there and say he's been reinstated, I think they need to say why, right? You know, even if they don't necessarily tell us exactly what happened, what did he do since to justify him being reinstated? Because he obviously did something bad enough to justify him having to file for reinstatement. So to me, this whole thing's been handled very poorly. There's so little transparency from the league and how this investigation went and what the outcome was. We know very, very little, but we do know that he had to file for reinstatement. And apparently now we know that he's been reinstated. So there needs to be an explanation. And again, I understand if there's certain things that can't be said or people that need to be protected or, whatever happened. But you have to tell us what he's done since, at least to get him to justify, reinstatement. It looks bad all around. This whole situation pretty much ruined the Rev season, along with some injuries as well. But this whole situation pretty much ruined the Rev season. They were in second place at the time. We all know what happened after that. And for this to be kind of treated so cavalierly now, where he's being reinstated and we have no idea what happened, it doesn't sit right.
Bob, any thoughts on the Bruce situation?
Yeah, I mean, it couldn't have been that bad. Like, whatever he did, I think one thing that kind of gets glossed over, right, is, MLS is a single entity, right? So I know we all kind of, we call the teams that we support clubs and this, that, and the other, but it's one entity. So, this is like somebody that was working in accounting gets fired or goes away for a little while and then comes back 6 months later and now they're working in the marketing department. And it's just like, well, I don't understand what he could have possibly done that was so bad that he had to resign from the Revs, but then is now going to be able to come back in less than 6 months and potentially take another job, essentially for the same organization that told him that he had to go away. Like, it's just very, very strange. Like, I really can't understand how he did something that forced him to leave, forced him to be, it was a big, long investigation that nobody seems to be able to talk about. But all of a sudden, everything's fine and he can come back and take another job. It's one of the stranger things that I've come across. And I don't know how anyone can make sense of it because no one knows what actually happened.
And I think this also goes beyond, I think fans deserve an answer, but also the players. I mean, if you're in that Revolution locker room and Bruce Arena is in serious consideration for the DC United job, which I believe Stephen Goff and Tom Quinlan and a few others have reported, well, what the heck? That was our guy. And I think the obvious comparable for New England sports fan is the Ime Udoka situation, which happened a couple of years ago. And, he's now coaching in Houston as if nothing happened. But at the time, it was treated with major secrecy, major confidentiality. And I don't know what has happened here with Bruce, but I can't help but look at the Udoka situation and think there was a situation there where they were trying to protect someone else involved in that scenario. So maybe there is someone else that doesn't want this to come to light and they are respecting that person's wishes. Maybe this is a protection of Bruce. Maybe Bruce has done something and MLS wants to slap him on the wrist and give him a punishment, but they don't want to punish him too much because he's Bruce Arena. Maybe it's a little of both. I don't know. I do not know. But the fact that we don't have answers speaks to me that it's something that clearly MLS wants to go away. And I don't know if we will ever get the full answer on it. And I know Dave Vandenberg keeps teasing that he's going to speak. I'm really curious to see what he has to say. I know Shalry Joseph talked to Seth McComber a little bit, but didn't get into the specifics of the scenario. But they talked a little bit about him quitting the New England Revolution. And he seems to be interested to eventually get back into coaching in MLS. So, there seems to be some teases and some chatter, and it doesn't seem like there's any NDAs. It's just something that everyone's quiet for. And I don't know why that is. I don't know why there's so much secrecy, and the secrecy would make me think it's really bad. But if he's back in MLS, I don't understand. And you have to assume he's going to get a job in MLS, maybe not as a head coach. There's only two vacancies left. There's Montreal, there's DC. We've talked before. I can't imagine DC is going to bring him in. It doesn't seem like a very good fit. And they also have a lawsuit with a former trainer who got fired for an inappropriate gesture. So if you're bringing in a head coach that just got suspended for inappropriate comments, I don't know if that's going to help you there. So I don't know if bringing in a 71-year-old head coach with a new GM who's fairly young, I don't know if that's a great spot there. I think they said that on Extra Time too. So I don't really know. I don't really know where this is going, but the fact that they've reinstated him, it has to be for a purpose. So maybe he's going to come in as a consultant or an assistant GM. Maybe he's going to go hang out with Kenny in Cincinnati. I could see something like that. But very, very, very bizarre all the way around. And I think the fact that there is no answers, it's very, very MLS. We talk about MLS, you know, with the US Open Cup and, you know, all the things they do that kind of drive fans crazy. I mean, the lack of transparency on this and one of your biggest figures in US soccer and Major League Soccer, it's tarnished his reputation, whether or not this story comes out. I'm just very confused to how we're expected for this to all go away.
Yeah. You know, one other thing too is Shari Joseph and the way that he just, you know, all of a sudden he wasn't there anymore. That I would imagine was probably really upsetting to a lot of Rev supporters. I mean, he played for the club. He's one of the best players that the club has ever had. And he started off when he started coaching after he retired, you know, he went all the way to like the bottom of grassroots. Like I used to see him at Memorial Day, tournaments coaching, which is just about the last place that any coach wants to be, is running around to games when it's 90 degrees out on Memorial Day weekend. But he went all the way, you know, down to that level and it started working his way up, you know, through the Revs Academy. You know, and it seemed like there was maybe something, you know, down the road where maybe they were looking at him as being, you know, a head coach of the Revs, you know, somewhere down the road and having done it in the correct way as opposed to the Jay Heaps way, where he's actually learned the trade of coaching and has kind of worked his way up, you know, and then all of a sudden he's gone and, you know, no explanation as to why Charlie Joseph isn't with the Revs anymore either. That to me was really upsetting at the time as well, that, you know, he's a huge, huge part of the club and has been for a long time. And, you know, all of a sudden he was dismissed one day and, you know, I don't even think Kurt said his name in the press conference. I think he just said, you know, oh yeah, those two guys don't work here anymore. It's like, That's a little rough considering the status that Joseph has with the Revolution.
John, anything to add here, or should we move on? Enough baloney. Do we want to move on from baloney here?
Yeah.
No, I think that's a great point that Tom made. I agree with all of that. It is unfortunate, especially to see Joseph gone because of his stature with the club and what he's done. And you know, he has he's been building a decent coaching resume. He had success with the Granada national team too as their manager. So yeah, that doesn't sit well either, but it's a great point Tom makes.
Mm-hmm. And we've had Shawry on the show before. I don't know if you want me to share this, Sean, but you know, we've reached out to Shawry if you wanted to come on the show. I know we've reached out to Dave. It's not clear to me if Dave got our message or not. We've invited them on the show to talk. Richie, Bruce, if you're listening, you're welcome to come on the show to talk. If any players want to come on the show to talk, if you want to talk privately, revolutionrecap@gmail.com. We help us help you. Let us figure this out. I can't imagine we're going to get any bites.
Williams still on vacation?
Richie Williams is still under contract until I believe the end of the year, and it's not clear if he's coming back. I can envision he's coming back. He was given notice he was not returning to the team. So unless the team reversed course, I mean, it's not like I could understand too, if they wanted to just put him on ice and kind of give him paid vacation away from the team, away from the situation for whatever happened. Obviously he was, you know, up to his eyeballs in it and, you know, seemed to get a lot of criticism from all angles. So I understand if they want to, you know, cut him a check, have him kind of go away, but his contract's up and I don't understand why they would renew it. So I imagine he's on the job hunt right now. But it's, I don't know, who knows? They brought back Anulfo, so maybe they're bringing back Williams. I feel like there's two very different people with very different roles. I can't imagine Richie Williams being on the technical staff and having the same level of respect with the players after kind of the implosion after that Athletic article came out last September. So that's my take. Sean, I don't know if you want anything.
Even if none of this had happened, if you were just changing head coaches, it seems unlikely that a new head coach would bring, you know, a veteran assistant from a previous regime back with him. So I would be shocked if he's, I think you're right. His contract ends at the end of the year. I think it's just going to, you know, be a parting of the ways when his contract is up.
Although Kevin Hitchcock is apparently coming back. That Tom Quinlan said that Hitchcock is going to have an option year, I believe, exercised. That might be different because that's an option year, whereas I believe Richie Williams' contract was ending altogether. But
I think it's also different because he's the goalkeeper coach and not a, you know, veteran top assistant.
Yes, yes. And he had no issues with players whatsoever this past season. No players returning to the team had any issues with Kevin Hitchcock. Definitely no one, no new signings that he's not on speaking terms with or anything like that. Other news and notes here before we wrap up. Former Revolution Revs 2 legend Justin Renix signed with AC Oulu of Finland. A very random signing. I tried to figure out what the connection between Justin Renix and Finland is. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's similar to Matt Turner having a great grandfather from Lithuania, and maybe he's got a distant relative who's Finland and he's got an EU passport or something and he's able to go play there. But seems very random to sign for a mid-table team in Finland. And right when the offseason started too. So it feels like that's been in the works for a little bit. Best of luck to Justin. He's finally made his way over to Europe years later, after his first attempt in the Mike Burns era. Sean, you didn't have anything you wanted to add, did you?
No, nothing for me. I'm just as surprised as you that he's there and not, you know, in USL or somewhere else.
I thought a USL contract would be good, but I guess he could always maybe come back and play in USL. So the best guess I have is he just wanted to try his, you know, test the waters in Europe, and this is about the highest level he can do right now. But it's a one-year contract with a one-year option. So if he thrives over there, he's going to be in central Finland for quite some time. So God bless him. Georgi Petrovic finally playing for Chelsea. The $17 million man recorded a clean sheet this past weekend against Sheffield United. Sean, do you remember who he – Sheffield, right?
Yeah, I think – did he have one save in that game? I think he had one save.
Still counts as a clean sheet. Also went to penalty kicks today against Newcastle. Sean, fact check. Newcastle.
Yeah. Newcastle. Oh. It was a much more impressive performance today than his shutout.
2 for 2. Also, Georgi Petrovic, unlike his League's Cup performance, gets a huge penalty kick save over there for Chelsea. So good for you, Petro. You finally get that PK save. Bobby Shuttleworth, recognized on the Florida State Women's Soccer, I believe it was the Coaching Staff of the Year Award for NCAA Women's Soccer down at Florida State. So congratulations to Bobby Shuttleworth in his continued coaching career. Tom Bogart reported the New England Revolution interested in Julian Gressel, but it looks like he is going to Inter Miami. That was reported also by Tom Bogart earlier today. Bogart described it as a two-horse race, but is quickly becoming a one-horse race with Gressel heading to Miami. To be fair, I think a lot of players are willing to go to Florida with less taxes and the opportunity to go play with Leo Messi. I don't blame the Revs for not being able to match that pitch. And also, the Nick Lima trade was made official. We hyped that up last podcast. Sean, I know you listened to last podcast and you had some thoughts on Damian Rivera and Ryan Spalding. Did you have any thoughts on Nick Lima, who I'm sure you follow his career, you know, really heavily? You have a lot of thoughts on him. Anything you want to add here?
Yes, it's just the move they should have made a couple years ago. They needed to do it. How many times have I talked about them needing a veteran fullback option on this roster? And if they had made that move a year sooner, you know, maybe the season would have gone differently. So I think it's a good move. It's just, you know, blatantly obvious they needed to make that move sooner than they did.
Better late than never. And that's it. That's all I have for news and notes. Tom, anything you want to leave our listeners with here today?
I guess on the Renix, you know, if you were able to gamble on things like where will Justin Renix go, I would have lost a lot of money that he didn't end up down in Rhode Island. I thought that was the most obvious move that he could make, but you know, he's gone over to Finland, and so, you know, hopefully that works out for him. But I just thought that was kind of a bizarre move that came out of nowhere, but you know, they wanted him, and so hopefully he has some success over there.
And by the way, before I hop over to you, Sean, I do want to give a shout out to the Raising Anchor podcast. If you're looking forward to RIFC next season, if you're going to follow them along with the Revs, I recommend you go subscribe to Raising Anchor. They do episodes once a week. Even though there are no games, they're doing a really good job of covering RIFC as they're building up to their expansion season. And I've talked to them a few times. They're doing a great job on their podcast, but they hyped up a big signing They said that there's a big signing coming for RIFC, and I don't know, you know, my thought initially was, what's a big name signing for USL? But they're speculating that potentially it could be Juan Agudelo, because there's a connection there with Birmingham Legion and Conor Smith. So, and it seems like there's a few players coming over from Birmingham that have made their way up to Rhode Island. So keep an eye out for that, that Rhode Island might be a landing spot for Juan Agudelo. Sean, anything? Oh, and also they signed Joe Brito, which, Sean, you know, was a Revolution Academy Player of the Year from one of our last episodes a few months ago, correct?
Yes, thanks for that reminder.
That was the name that you did not come to mind whatsoever. He's now playing at RIFC, so you can go check him out there. Sean, anything you want to leave our listeners with? And where can they follow you on social media? Because unlike Tom, you have social media. Tom has a life. He has, you know, he spends time with his family. Unlike us, you have social media. So where can people find you on social media, Sean?
I do envy Tom staying off of social media. It's a good decision. But you can find me at Sean L. Donahue on Twitter. I am also on both Threads and Blue Sky, trying to be a little bit more active there. So if you are anti-X/Twitter, you can also find me over there. And Joe Brito, actually, he came to my attention during the U.S. Open Cup stuff, because he was very, very vocal about his anger towards MLS for dropping out of the Open Cup. So interesting there. But the other note I wanted to make was also about Rhode Island FC. Their schedule came out, I think, the day before the Revs, or at least earlier this week, and the Revs schedule, I think, is due to come out, I believe, tomorrow. But be sure to check out their schedule and plan any trips there. I think Birmingham Legion has a date up at Rhode Island FC. So if you're a fan of any Rev South, they are going to be up here Saturday, August 31st. So plan your trip to Bryant.
Mm-hmm. Maybe Jay Heaps will make the trip up. Maybe we'll get to see good old Jay Heaps these days. And you can follow us on Twitter at Revolution Recap. Make sure you follow us on Instagram, Threads, Facebook, Blue Sky, any of all of those websites that we are on and trying to stay active on. Be sure to follow our friends, The Blazing Musket, on Twitter at Blazing Musket, and subscribe to their Substack, where you receive every piece of news to your email inbox. Be sure to follow our friends at The Rebellion on Twitter, and go to anyrebellion.org to learn more about them and their season memberships for 2024. And of course, thank you to our sponsor, BetOnline. If you want to lose money on where Justin Renick will play next, make sure you go to BetOnline and use promo code BLEAV when you sign up, BLEAV, for a 50% welcome bonus. And also, please make sure you're subscribed on iTunes, wherever you're listening to this, and make sure you rate and subscribe. 5 stars, please. I believe we are at 68 reviews on Spotify. I believe we're still at 68. So if we get at least one more, that'd be very nice. Let's end the year very nice with one more review on Spotify. Please, please, please. We'll be back whenever there's more news with the New England Revolution. It seems to be coming fast and furious for the Revs, so we'll hopefully be back soon, but maybe not until the new year. We'll see. Until we have more news, thank you everyone for listening, and go Revs.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.